grade 5, and this lecture concerns the ways in which to prepare for a main lesson block. Now, the amount of content one has to assimilate and in turn teach takes a huge leap forward in grade 5. Grade 4 was already quite a bit more than grade 3, but grade 5 goes far beyond that difference. And in certain ways, particularly because of the amount of history that a teacher is going to bring to the children, and the thousands of years of history that that entails, your preparation could seem to be even more daunting than that which you have to do in grade 6, perhaps even grade 7. So how do you work with this and in turn go into botany in the right way, and perhaps subjects that you don't have a necessarily sympathetic connection to? Well, here's an archetype that we can draw upon going back to the year 1919 and the night before school was to open. And I'm not talking about the evening, I'm talking about the night. Walter Johannes Stein, a very close student of Rudolf Steiner's, trained as a scientist, was invited to join the faculty of the first Waldorf school. Though a trained philosopher and scientist, he was given history and literature to teach. And now this is a quotation from his own autobiography. "I still remember my despair when Rudolf Steiner told me at 2 a.m. one night that I should have to take a history lesson next morning. But I do not even know in what century Charlemagne lived," I said. "Begin by teaching what you know," said Steiner. "Give them the history of the World War, for there you surely were yourself, were you not?" Unquote. Yes, indeed, Stein had been there in the trenches and knew that experience well. So there's a guideline from Rudolf Steiner. Start from where you are. Start from what you know. And this is why I've also advised you in the introduction to this course, you don't have to follow the numbers or the order in which I present things. That's my way. That's convenient for me to present it to you that way. But you can also just start from the subject that you think you have the greatest connection to, that you're going to like the most. And hopefully that enthusiasm will radiate out into the other subjects. In much the same way that when you taught a fairy tale in grade 1 or a Norse myth in grade 4, you directed it at any particular moment to one of the temperaments in the class, knowing that if that group of children, cholerics, phlegmatics, or whatever, got deeply engaged, the rest of the class would follow. And so it is with your own enthusiasm and engagement. I should also mention that 9 years later, Dr. Stein went on to write his magnum opus, World History in the Light of the Holy Grail, with particular reference to the centuries in which Charlemagne lived. So there's hope for you as well. So let's look at some aspects of this. 8 hours of preparation for every 1 hour of teaching. That is a wonderful rule, an ironclad rule. It's more than a rule, it's a law. It's a law akin to a law of nature. Rudolf Steiner didn't make it up, he discovered it. But what does that mean, 8 hours of preparation? Well, for most of us, we imagine a table next to our desk groaning with many books. And are having to read all of them. So let's say in a main lesson block, 3 weeks long, okay, I'm teaching 2 hours a morning, 5 mornings a week, that's 10 hours, that's 30 hours of teaching. Okay, I'm not going to be teaching history, let's say, the whole time for the full 2 hours. Let's cut that in half. I'm only really teaching for 15 hours, and then I'm showing them how to draw, or we're singing, or something like that. 15 hours, okay, that's 1/8 of the time I need to prepare. Okay, guys, do the math. Let's see how good you are. Break up 15 into 10 plus 5, okay? I think that comes out to about 120 hours of preparation for every three-week block that you do. Divide that one by 24. Oh, never mind. Okay. Why does he give us a rule, a law, as I call it, which is utterly impossible? Well, it all depends on what you think preparation is. If you think it's just reading a lot of books, if you can do it, good for you. If you've got those hours on your hand and good eyes, if you can even find that many books nowadays to read to begin with, clearly there's more to it than that. Something obviously like the geography block. You've probably done your share of traveling around North America. You're going to have a lot to share with your class. Botany. You may like to garden. You may have worked a summer at somebody's biodynamic farm. Or at least you like to eat, and that's gotten you interested in the composition of foods and the right way to plant them. You are probably going to find, sometimes much to your own surprise, that you already have these subjects living within you in one form or another, that you've had life experiences that you will be able to draw upon. Now, if this is new to you and you're in fifth grade, I'm a little sorry, because the ideal is that every single summer, even every weekend, even every day, you could be thinking, I am preparing for everything else I have to teach for the rest of my Waldorf teaching career. You know, when I look up at the clouds in the sky, I am getting ready for meteorology. When I see that beautiful vista of mountains, there's geography, probably mineralogy as well. When I read today's newspapers and learn of the conflicts between Hindus and Muslims in East Asia, okay, I think back to the grade 6 curriculum, or forward to it, the rise of Islam, and so on and so on and so forth. Every vacation, every moment on your own, enjoy it fully, but also have a part of you that is, as it were, jotting down mental notes about it. Now, what's wonderful nowadays is if you have a device like an iPhone or an iPad or even just a plain old computer, that used to be pretty advanced, and who knows what else may have arisen since the time I first recorded this lecture and the time you're listening to it, it is easier and easier to jot these things down. You can not only take a photograph and hope that you can retrieve it in years to come, you can take the photograph and you can file it in several different places on your computer or mobile device, you know, list it under the name of a main lesson block or a topic, or tag it in some way or other. So there's really no excuse nowadays. It's possible for us to be ceaselessly recording our experiences so that we can reflect upon them later. So this is very, very important. Be proactive in your preparation. This summer, you may feel overwhelmed by the amount of preparation you have to do for grade 5, but I will tell you, don't leave it at that. read one book at least that deals with a grade six topic. Maybe it's some potboiler novel about Rome at its most decadent. Maybe it's a wonderful book of essays by John McPhee on geology and mineralogy. Maybe it's Norman Davidson's great book on astronomy. Whatever it is, start to get the feeling of what is to come. I also advise you, if you can, to look at something having to do with grade 7 or grade 8 as well. Even if it's just an article or two, don't get stuck in the grade that you're in. This is a dynamic experience. You're always living between what you're doing, what you just did, and what is to come. And as I have said, or will say if you haven't heard it yet, grade 5 is a critical year of looking back and looking forward and living very strongly in that interplay. So that's one aspect. Don't get stuck on the idea that it's all about reading books or even, you know, cutting and pasting from the internet, but just realize that your life experience is also a big part of what you can learn from. I knew a teacher in my school, incredible teacher. She would probably read every summer at least 25, and I think sometimes closer to 40 books, particularly on historical subjects where she didn't feel herself to be that strong, but on other subjects as well that she was going to get ready to teach. And that was just in first grade. So, you know, she was an incredible teacher, really, really good. Now, there's another teacher in the school who was almost as good as she was. Not quite, but almost. He would read 2 or 3 books a summer, maybe 4 or 5 if he really pushed himself. Okay? He wasn't as good as she was, but you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. Their classes were pretty close. And they went on to high school and did really well, and they got into good colleges and so on. It was not just year by year, but the long picture as well. They were exceptional classes. So for one teacher, yes, it was the reading. She went into the first day of that class and felt incredibly secure in what she knew, had taken excellent notes, was really well prepared. For the other, it was reading one book or two books and making a very deep connection to the subject, using those books as trampolines, as jumping off points, as ports to embark on a journey within. That's another way of preparing. And you have to find your own style, but don't buy into today's, you know, intellectual content heavy world that if you don't know all the facts and figures and all the names and dates, you're really in trouble. You have to find the way to teach these content heavy subjects that is bearable for you, that won't make you look stupid in front of the children, and that shows that you are learning it along with them. That's perfectly okay. Steiner was fond of saying to people, oh, you don't know any French? Well, you know, you have a stairway in between your office and the classroom in which you're to teach tomorrow. While you're going down the stairs, memorize a few French words and you'll be ready. That was the kind of pressure under which those poor teachers had to work. They were meant to go to Anthroposophical Society meetings every night until the wee hours of the morning, and then get up fresh as a daisy, ready to teach subjects in which they had virtually no background. It was as though Steiner used these poor souls as his guinea pigs, you know, as trials, as betas, to prove that it can be done. Now, we're no longer as cruel to our teachers, at least not on purpose. so you don't have to go that far. But I do want to stress, if you're worried about content, put that out of your mind right now. The most important thing in learning, in teaching, is, as Steiner says in the Foundations of Human Experience, it is relationship, making a relationship to the subject. Now, here are some tips about how to do this. Number one, and for some of you who've attended other conferences I've given, you've heard this before, but it doesn't hurt to hear it again. See if you're actually doing it. If you have not done so already, then start today. Assemble a file folder, a bunch of file folders, real physical file folders. So here again, you're probably going to be able to do a lot of this using a computer. The program Evernote, which is free for a variety of applications, is used by many people in this way. Or OneNote, which is a Microsoft program very much like it. They're sort of scrapbook programs. So here's what you do, you know, virtually or really. Assemble a file folder for every block in the grades 1 through 8 Waldorf curriculum. Now, if you're in fifth grade now, you may just do grades 5 through 8. But one day it would be good to go backwards and do the other four grades as well. And then write down every block you're ever going to teach in those years has its own folder. And from here on, every day or two, you make it your business to put something in one of those folders. This summer, it just might be a whole bunch of photographs from your trip to the Rocky Mountains for North American geography. Or it might be a magazine article that you're reading about hybridization of plants. Maybe you're thinking of doing this in your own garden. Okay, put that in your botany folder. You might be reading about various kinds of meteorological disasters going on in the world. Put those articles in your eighth grade meteorological folder. Another article or a review of a really good book on the French Revolution goes in your eighth grade history of revolution folder. You get the idea. What's happening this way is that the whole curriculum starts to live with you and in you. It's all there, not as a kind of step-by-step, agonizing, slow progression, but it's all there at once. And as you teach any part of it, you feel the connection moving from folder to folder. You can see the interweaving nature, the integrated, interdisciplinary nature of the Waldorf curriculum. So it helps you in that way. Also, this way, even though you've only have one summer to sort of put articles in your fifth grade folders, that you would want to keep going through the school year as well, but this way, you've got a year, a whole year, to be filling up your grade 6 folder, your folders for the blocks. You've got 2 years to fill your 7th grade folders, and you've got a full 3 years to fill the 8th grade folders. In other words, you have a longer amount of time to fill the folders that require more content, more material, because they're upper grades. Isn't it great? It works out so incredibly well. Now, I discovered this because for me it was a matter of absolute necessity. For years, I've been doing teacher conferences and I've been visiting schools, and I'm asked to mentor somebody in grade 6 one day and somebody in grade 3 the next day. And then the fifth grade teacher is absent on Friday, so could I teach, what's she doing, botany? Can I teach a botany class? I constantly was training people in all of the grades, and I was finding myself thrust into classrooms where I really had to know what was going on in any given block. So I found these folders were extremely helpful to just keep me on task and to keep me stimulated, not to get stuck in what I did in first grade in those paradisial years way back, but what's going on today. And I'd say also, no harm in keeping some folders of modern scientific findings. What's going on in brain science that people say proves Waldorf is so superior? What's the latest in reading technology? How well are computers and whiteboards and iPads really working out in school systems? That's not bad for your parent evenings. And we'll be talking about parent work later on. Okay, file folders. You have one box of them, and that is going to be, as it were, your brain. you know, your brain on Waldorf. That will be a source of interest and memory and so on. So that's a really good way of doing it. Okay, that's sort of the overview, the big picture. Now, I'll imagine, because I'm sure for many of you, this is the area where you're most nervous, you're going to do history. Okay, let's say you're getting ready for your first block in Indian history. What do you do? First of all, yes, you do read something. Go to an encyclopedia. I would suggest start with a children's encyclopedia, or the next best thing, Wikipedia. Something kind of really general, something that gives a huge overview. And now remember, as you'll see when we work with the specific blocks, you're not really doing very much of Indian history per se. You're working almost exclusively with the mythology, and particularly with the incarnations of Vishnu. So you'd start there. And again, as we get into the specifics of each block, I'll sort of guide you, you know, what you're going to look at first and so on. But what I want to emphasize is whatever you're doing, botany, geography, history, go first to a very general source and get an overview. And a place, something that's not terribly boring and that's not too intellectually demanding. That just as it were, it's like that archangelic view. It gives you the big, big, big picture. And then go to the children's library and the young person's library. And there get yourself one or two really simple books on the subject. Now, why are you doing that? Because I think you're an idiot? No. This is what I did too. I don't think I'm an idiot. My children did, but I don't. But anyway, no. This is because the people who are able to write books like this are really talented, gifted people. They know how to take complicated subjects and how to eliminate the non-essential. You might not agree with their choice of what's essential and what isn't, but at least they've made that decision, and how to make it accessible to an 8-year-old. Well, you're not going to be teaching children that young. To a 14-year-old, you're not going to be teaching them quite that old. You sort of will have to find your own way. But by reading these books, which sometimes these wonderful children's books are written by people who are eminent historians and who just jumped at the chance to share their passion and their love with children. And they do incredibly good jobs. So that's what you do. It also helps to demystify it and to de-intimidate it. You're not so scared, because you see the stories are basically fairly simple. There are only a few main characters. Yes, when it comes to India, you know, the names can be a little bit daunting and so on. Go and talk to one of your parents who, you know, is in an ashram or something. They'll help you out with all the names, or their guru can help you anyway. So you can, you know, find the way for that. And then you start to take your notes. And I'd say the first reading of the general book or of the very simple younger children's book, you don't necessarily even have to take notes. Just let it live there. I mean, we're talking about something you could do in one day, this assignment. You could be doing a good deal of the reading content just in one day. So, you know, over the summer, imagine that you're going to spend 2 days, maybe 3 days of fairly solid work getting ready for each block. Okay? Think about that. Again, do the math. That's not impossible. It still gives you time for a summer vacation, time with your family, time to go to all the emergency meetings that you have to attend and hear that your salary's been cut again. And in fact, now that you've prepared so well, we're not sure there even will be a fifth grade class. You know, that sort of thing that really makes summer such an enjoyable time of year. So this is to make your life bearable. I am not trying to hand you one of these things about, you know, in my day, this is what we had to do. To hell with my day. You know, some people worked very hard, some didn't, some could handle it, some couldn't. What's the difference? But nowadays, especially because of the digitalization of so much information, it's actually possible for you to get a whole lot without having to exert yourself terribly. And for you to be able to put your fingers on the information that you need pretty readily. So that's just wonderful. Now, I'm not saying, oh good, this makes your life easier and it's the shortcut to Waldorf education. In fact, just the opposite. What I'm saying is, you know, you can get the content for a lot of this stuff pretty quickly. I'll give you specific advice with the specific blocks. True of all of your blocks. But the important thing then is what you do with it. And this is the most important element in your preparation. First of all, how do you inwardly picture it? You might want to spend more time trying to think of the images that are going to go in the main lesson book than the specific stories and names and dates. You may want to spend more time thinking of which poems and verses you're going to bring the students to accompany these blocks when you teach them. So these are very important things. But most important of all is the question, what are you making of it for yourself? How are you relating to this? What is being awakened in you? And that is the key in every main lesson block, what it means to you, because that more than anything is what you will convey to the children. And this is why I suggest don't ever get too information heavy. Don't ever know too much about the subject, because then it becomes for the children an avalanche of facts and figures, and they don't feel the human element that's really there. This is not the last time they will have the possibility of studying any subject that you teach them. If they go on to the Waldorf High School, they'll get it all over again, only faster and more intellectually. They go on to university, they may be able to study some of this stuff there. Or as they're older, they may sort of reawaken to some of the things they learned when they were younger and find the meaning that it has. And when you have to end a block without having finished everything about that age, remind the children that there are libraries, that they can go and read about these things themselves. And this is an age where the children should be wishing to know more than you taught them, to have the feeling that even though you know so much and are such a great teacher, that you don't know everything. And there are other ways of learning this. There are other people who perhaps have said even more interesting things about the subject. So that's a little humbling for us as class teachers, but it's really wonderful and invigorating for the children because now they realize part of education is self-education as well. And the history in particular, this should be incredibly stimulating and enlivening for the children, because it is really speaking to exactly where they are. History and botany in the fifth grade are the quintessential subjects speaking to these etheric physical forces that Janus-like look longingly to the past, but also with some anticipation to the future. Look to the light of the sun, but also need the darkness of the earth. So when it comes to planning your main lessons, don't be nervous. Don't be stressed out, or else you won't want to go beyond grade five. You know, you'll just be a wreck, and you won't be able to imagine teaching Martin Luther and the beginnings of the Reformation or other stimulating subjects like that. So really, you know, breathe with it. Live with the subject. Even if a little bit of it is made your own, that will speak volumes to the children. Okay, now in the rest of this conference, I will be, of course, sharing with you the specifics of preparing for one kind of block or another. But I wanted to give this overview, and please, please, think about that file folder, whether it's real, virtual, digital, whatever. That will be a very, very wonderful guide for you over these next demanding years.